And now, let's return to What Happened on TalkZone.com. Here's your host, Tom Inabnett.
Introducing ourselves, so to speak, to Mr. Paul Ryan. And again, if you missed it, in the first segment we talked about how he campaigns, how he appears, how he wants to portray himself to the American people. In the second segment, we went a little bit different, and we went to where he works. We went to the House Budget Committee, and we started listening to some of the things he's actually telling to the President of the United States and the other members of his committee. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I have to believe that when he's at work in front of the President, in this setting, he's not politicking. He's in there actually giving the results of studies and so forth and presenting his viewpoint on Obamacare. And as I said before, I really don't want to make that the central issue for today. What I did want to show you is a couple of views of the same guy. Because, again, remember that one of the biggest challenges Mr. Ryan is going to have is that people really don't know who he is. So let's listen. I've got a couple more little clips I'm going to play that have Mr. Ryan, and then we're going to get back to something a little bit different. And so here's what I want you to listen to. And this regards what Mr. Ryan thinks about the president's budget and budgets in general. Dave, please play clip 11.
Now, I got a lot of problems with the president's budget. After all, he did follow the budget law. He submitted a budget each of the four budget seasons, unlike the Senate, which chose to ignore the budget law by not offering a budget in 2010, 2011, and now they say they won't do it in 2012. I mean, go figure. You're elected to represent the people of your district or your state. We have a debt crisis on the horizon, meaning you need to pass a budget to fix that, and they've decided for over 1,000 days not to do anything about it?
Now, that's interesting, isn't it? Over 1,000 days. Now, understand that it is customary for each branch of the government to submit a budget to the Congressional Budget Office to approve its expenses and so forth and so on. And for the last, since Mr. Obama became president, the Senate has refused to build a budget. And you wonder why. I mean, the House has submitted its budgets. Even the executive branch has submitted their budgets. But here's something that's very interesting. In the Senate, they don't. And Mr. Ryan has an excellent point. If you get elected to serve your constituency, then aren't you supposed to serve your constituency rather than just sitting on the sidelines and doing absolutely nothing? It seems to me that Mr. Reed and cohorts, I guess is the best word for him, needs to understand that his house, his branch of Congress, needs to submit a budget. And it's just conjecture on my part. But it seems to me that the key reason not to submit a budget is because once you put it on paper, people can start asking questions about it. What is it that the Senate is trying to hide? Now, I'm going to get this, and this, again, is going to come from the Daily Caller. I like it. It's a pretty good thing. I think it's pretty bipartisan. But anyway, in an article in the Daily Caller regarding that the Senate does not want to pass a budget, and they've said as much. They're not going to pass a budget. They haven't passed a budget in 3 years. But anyway, this article states that the Senate Democratic leaders do not plan to propose a budget this year. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid told reporters, last February, I believe it was, saying that they had already done so with a debt ceiling agreement. Well, I didn't see a budget. I didn't hear anything about a budget. Matter of fact, all I heard was people crying for a budget. So apparently, it did not get addressed last February. And Reed actually goes on, I'll quote, "We do not need to bring a budget to the floor this year. It's done. We don't need to say it. We don't need to do it." Now, that's what Mr. Reed said, according to The Hill. Now, Democrats said they reached an agreement to raise at the debt ceiling that was set for the fiscal year 2012. And they think that's okay, but that's not the same thing. Still, there is no budget in place. And it makes me wonder why there's no budget in place. Now, Mr. Reed, I know you're not going to listen to me because I'm just me, but maybe you'll listen to all of us. Ladies and gentlemen, we need to tell these people in the Senate that they need to get back to work and do what they're supposed to do. Mr. Ryan was very clear and very correct when he points the finger at a Congress that refuses to do what its constituency has put it there to do. It's very possible that maybe that's just been too long. Now, Mr. Ryan, I'm saying, has come under some issues about the tax policies that we now have. And the reason I say tax policies, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm referring to the Bush tax cuts. They've been referred to the Bush tax cut for year after year after year after year. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I promise you that if they have been in effect 10 years, so to speak, they were passed between 2001 and 2003. And after 10 years, it's not a tax cut anymore, ladies and gentlemen. It's our tax policy. You see, this is another way they're going to shift things around. Because understand, remember that the liberal Democrats want you to believe that the Bush tax cuts are a horrible thing. They give the upper 2% the biggest chunk of the pie. And we've gone over that. It's true that the upper 2% get a larger tax cut because they pay a larger percentage to start with. If you pay 7%, they pay 26%. So it makes sense that theirs would fall. Actually, right now you're paying 10. You would pay 7 under the new tax policies. Anyway, understand that it's not tax cut anymore. We have to get rid of that vernacular because it's simply not accurate. And here's what Mr. Ryan has to say about that very thing.
Remember, these tax policies have been in place for a decade, Charlie, so they're really not tax cuts. We're just talking about keeping taxes where they are. A year and a half ago, the president said the last thing you want to do in a soft economy is raise taxes. We agree. The economy's worse now than it was then. So we're going to, next week, pass an extension of a tax code for another year, and we've already passed two bills dealing with the sequester, all of which are sitting over the Senate, which hasn't done anything for 3 years.
Now, it's interesting. Again, Senate hasn't done anything for 3 years. That's the second time he mentioned the Senate not acting as the Senate is supposed to act. And you saw that he agreed with me about the tax policies. And no, I didn't get that from them. I had that conclusion, you know, about 8 years ago when they actually weren't cuts anymore, but they were policy. But understand that Mr. Obama, you understand, Mr. Obama promised that it, or didn't promise, but he said that it was too risky to raise taxes in the middle of a recession. Too risky and to raise taxes on anyone. And we've talked about this before. The last people you want to put the burden on, and people are going to start, you know, write your letters. I know, I hear what you say. But the last people you want to make life difficult for are the people who create jobs and wealth and make sure that this country is moving in its market-based economic model that it was built to do with, built to run with. And understand that Mr. Obama's bloviating about the taxes, that the upper 2% should pay 95% of the taxes, whatever he wants, is our secret, our way to get away from the debt ceiling. From the deficit. This was one of the first points he bought. And the truth is, if you took every dime those 2% have, every nickel, sold their cars, sold their pets, sold their socks, took every dime they had and put it all together, it would not make the slightest dent in our federal deficit. And even if it did, we're in deficit spending over and over and over and over. We're spending more money than we take in. Now, in my family, and I've said this before, in my family, taking more money out than's coming in is a straight line to the poorhouse. Bankruptcy, buy a house. Now it's a $500 junky car. We may have to live in it. That's what the reality is for those of us that are going to be subject to the new tax codes. And understand, it's not Bush tax cuts. We said that once before. And these policies are going to put on the people who actually build our market economy such a burden that the market economy cannot be sustained. It's not my opinion, ladies and gentlemen. It's a fiscal fact that you simply cannot overspend over and over and over. And I promise you that we will be the most indebted nation in the world if we don't stop. We are already on a fast track to follow Italy and Spain into the gutter. I know that that is a harsh thing to say, but the truth cannot be can't be lost. You have to actually pay attention. You've got to watch what's happening and understand that all this bloviating, remember, at first it was, we want to kill the deficit. The second thing that I hear that's common is that we want everything to be fair. Everything to be fair. Well, if everything was fair, let's make everything fair. I like that. Let's take the entire budget that we need to raise money and split it evenly between everybody. Every man, woman, and child gets their portion of the federal budget each year, and we have to pay that. Now, that's fair. That's the only fair thing you can do, is to make everybody pay for all of it. And how would you like that? All of a sudden, you owe the federal government $150,000 a year, or whatever it would work out. I have not worked out the numbers because I'm not sure of the actual population. But just understand that the vast majority of the money that Congress uses does not come from individuals. Matter of fact, half of registered taxpayers in this country pay no taxes whatsoever. None. The upper 2%, and this number slides back and forth. It depends on who you talk to and so forth. But it's estimated that the upper 2% pay about 45% of the entire national income. That doesn't seem very fair. You got 2% paying 45%, and you got 50% paying nothing. So if you want to talk about fair taxes, ladies and gentlemen, let's talk about fair. Nobody wants fair taxes. Nobody wants that. Fair taxes, it would be a disaster to this country simply because of the fact 50% of us don't pay taxes because we couldn't afford to or didn't have enough money, didn't make enough money. But to be fair, you'd have to cut it in 335 million little pieces and give one little piece of that debt to every person in this country. Isn't that an interesting idea? One thing I wanted to, before we take a break for this particular segment, I wanted to discuss a little something, a little off topic. And we'll get back to Mr. Ryan, or, well, we'll see. But anyway, yeah, Newsweek's cover story. Did anybody get that one? Newsweek ran a cover story that I promise you, I fell out of my chair when I saw this cover. Now, understand that for the last, 10 years, or at least 4 years, the media has been in the pocket of whatever liberal is running, whatever Democrat is running, they've been in their pocket. Well, apparently, Neil Ferguson from Newsweek magazine has a different take. And understand that this is very interesting. The cover says, "Hit the Road, Barack. Why We Need a New President," by Neil Ferguson. And I suggest that you go out and read it. It's 5 pages long. I'm not going to go into it. But it's really extraordinarily interesting what this man from a liberal media said about the president. First time I've ever heard this type of rhetoric from a liberal. And I go one step further. Is this the one brick in the dike that will pull the water in and let all of the liberal media actually express its real feelings about Mr. Obama rather than following behind the carrot? And we'll be back right after this.